Welcome back to another episode of You Missed It. Today it is my turn to host, myself being Rylan, and I'm here with the usual gang, Zach, Andrew, Alex, and Jack. And today we are looking at a film that's a blast from the not-too-distant past, and that is 2006's The Fall. It is directed by Tarsem Singh, whose other works include The Cell, which is a better-known but definitely not better film, Immortals, and Mirror Mirror. His earlier works include several music videos, including R.E.M.'s Losing My Religion. The film was written by Tarsem, Dan Gilroy, who is the writer of Nightcrawler, and Nico Soltanakis. It stars Lee Pace, Justine Waddell, and a young, I hope I don't butcher her name too much, Katinsa Ntaru. The score is by Krishna Levy with a little help from our good friend Ludwig van. And the cinematography is by Colin Watkinson, and also notably costumes by Eiko Ishioka, who is designer of costumes for most of Tarsem's other films until her passing in 2012. And she also did a lot of work for theater, music videos, and Cirque du Soleil beforehand, which definitely shows in the film with the theatrical and kind of otherworldly flair that her looks have. This film was inspired by a Bulgarian film from 1981 called Yo Ho Ho. I wasn't really able to find out anything else out about that film other than that it inspired this one. So if anybody has any hidden gems about that, let us know. This one... and this film, The Fall, was shot over the course of 4 years, making it one of the longest productions ever, according to Wikipedia. And it was filmed on location in over 28 countries, including but not limited to India, Spain, Italy, France, Indonesia, Namibia, Czech Republic, Fiji, Turkey, and China, just to name a few. I guess before I get into any more details and open the floor, I suppose I should shill our social medias a little bit. You're probably listening to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, or YouTube. And if you're not, then you can go find us on those places. And also you can look us up on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, if I remember the login info and to actually update it. So
we're working on it, folks. We're working on it.
The best laid plans, the best intentions, you know, all that yada yada. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you can go to pretty much all the major social media platforms and look up either You Missed It or Why Am I Podcast, and we will turn up. Anyways, shilling over back to the movie that we just watched. It has a 60% rating on Rotten Tomatoes overall. Its budget was about $30 million, and it only grossed $3.7 million worldwide, with a limited release opening weekend, resulting in only $80,000 at the box office. So this film is definitely not a financial success. It is hit or miss with the critics, although one of my favorite comments was by Roger Ebert, who gave it 4 out of 4 stars, and his comments on this one ended as, "You might want to see it for no other reason than because it exists. There will never be another like it." Right. With that, I suppose I should give you a bit of a sum up here so that the rest of y'all know what we're talking about. This film is set in a hospital in 1920s Los Angeles, and it centers on the stories of two patients, a young 5-year-old girl named Alexandria and a film stuntman named Roy. Both are patients due to injuries related to falls in various circumstances, hence the title of the film, The Fall. The two start to build a friendship, and Roy begins to tell Alexandria stories in an effort to win her trust and send her as a gopher to where they keep the morphines. But that is essentially a subplot of the character development that serves as kind of a second fiddle to a visually stunning, detail-rich fantasy world that is viewed through the lens of an innocent childlike imagination. You get to You get to hear the stories with Roy's narration, but you see it purely through Alexandria's 5-year-old child eyes and imagination, and it gives you some pretty interesting dynamics. But enough of my rambling and what I think about this. We're going to go around the table and get some other thoughts on this. We're going to start with my left with Zacko. Have you seen this one before?
I did, actually. I fell for this movie years ago when Jack showed me it. It was, what, 2010, 2011?
Oh, something around there. That. I can't remember the date I showed it to you.
It was a while ago, though, and I think I might have seen it once since, but it's been years since I've seen it, and I mean, I think it's great. I think based off the details of what Rylan said, I think it definitely should have made more, and it definitely should have a higher, you know, critic rating or critic, you know, approval around the board, because I do think this is really great in a lot of regards. A lot of people go to the visual aspects, which are outstanding across the board, but I even like the story, you know, itself, too. I love the way that it ties in. It kind of goes, as she was saying, it's through the child's imagination, but Roy is narrating the whole thing, and I do like how they kind of combine, and it brings you to this, like, kind of fantasy world, but then it really, towards, as the movie goes, you kind of see the full thing where it's going, and it gets kind of dark, and it's really reflecting the reality of the situation that's going on, and I think that that gets really, really good as the movie goes on. Yeah, I just think, again, visually it's, you know, incredible. I love the kind of classic score that they use. It kind of goes, helps with the time and things like that a little bit as well, and yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool movie overall.
Lots to see, lots to hear.
It's great, and it's and the thing is, it's kind of a shame because I mean, Tarsem's movies afterwards, I like to call him Tarzan because it's just, you know, it's
or cool Tarkin name.
Or Tarkin's good too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's just known as Tarsem. Like yeah, that's his professional. That's his name.
Yeah, he's got the one.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a Cher.
Yeah, he's a Cher. He's the one name.
He's a Cher.
Cher. Yeah. Sting. Of that ilk.
Yeah. Exactly. But
so he's the chair of film director.
That's right.
Well, yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, it's just a shame that he, you know, like, I guess, like, afterwards he's made a few films and things, but nothing has kind of gone back to this one. But this film also hasn't really been seen by a lot of people. That's why I think it's a great pick for the show. Because, like, stuff like Mirror Mirror and things like that, it got mediocre reviews or to, like, bad reviews kind of thing. And from what I can tell, it kind of deserves that a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of remember that film being, like, during, like, the early, like, 2010s when they kept on releasing two of the same movie every year.
That's right.
It was, like, back-to-back Snow White films, and that was the second one
to
come out.
Yeah, it was
Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah, the Huntsman one.
Yeah. I saw that, and that was the, you know, the gladiator version of Snow White.
Yeah, sure. They made a sequel to that one, too.
They did.
Yeah, they did.
But, yeah, then the Mirror Mirror was the Julia Roberts, what's her... Emily Collins or whatever.
Lily Collins.
Lily Collins, thank you.
Yeah, that one I kind of only wanted to see just for the costume.
Exactly.
Which, again, well, that's what Eiko
he's known.
Ishioka.
That's what his films are known for. Like you look at The Cell and all that; they're all like
they're glamorous, yeah. Exactly. But I thought that this one did have, you know, even more. Even though the visuals again are amazing, I do think the story behind The Fall is very good too. Mm-hmm. And I think just having that combination is really great. And yeah, really, you know, in terms of visual films and things, you really haven't. I mean, at least in my opinion, you haven't really seen anything like this. And I just love the way that they use colors to kind of like establish a location and stuff like that, and make it kind of different from each other as it goes on. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I like the whole colors thing too. It especially makes sense because it's in a child's mind. So of course, like, the main characters, like, all kind of each have their own color.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you got Luigi with his bright yellow coat. You've got the bandit who's black and blue and the red accent, and then you've got the Indian guy who's all green, and then you got the Darwin with his bright red.
It's like pinkish,
very flamboyant fur coat. I don't know what pelt that is supposed to resemble.
I don't know.
It's like flamingo-like almost.
Almost, yeah.
I think the
Pepto-Bismol.
He was drawing flamingos too, right? So, or he was, right?
Yeah, he was near the beginning.
Yeah, that was the main.
So I guess that was the, he was going for.
But yeah, that's true too. I mean, like, the different characters and things each had like their main color.
It's almost like the
style.
Power Rangers a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, actually.
Or kind of like any
kid-centric superhero team.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
Transformers,
colors.
Whatever, right?
Well, because it helps for like the numerous wide shots that are in this film because you can instantly pick everybody out.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's definitely done by design for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The genius of Tarsem.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Andrew, your thoughts.
So I'll start with what I liked about it. Visually, it kind of made sense to me that that's probably what every critic said positively about it, I'm sure. It looks great. It looks really great. That's probably its strongest point. So every set location looks great. Every shot, generally, it draws you in. It's a varied, and that was interesting to hear you say how many locations they shot on, because I felt like, yeah, it was a varied set of scenes. You always saw something different. Even when you were going back to the hospital area, like where they are in LA, that they still managed to kind of mix that up a little bit, even though they were hitting up some of the same locations. I thought it looked great. It looked really, really great. Looked and sounded great. So on both ends, I did like the premise that he's a stuntman, and this is why he's in there, and he's dealing with depression, and there was that whole element, but from the viewpoint of a child. That was cool. I liked that. It was good. And the child's imagination, like the story going on from the child's point of view, and it's kind of a little ridiculous or a little funny at times, right? And he's just kind of, she's guiding it in a way, right? So that was really cool. So I dug those elements of it. I thought it was pretty good. However, there were little things that I didn't quite latch on to. So Zach, you said the story you liked a lot.
I did like it. Yeah,
I thought it was okay. Very okay. Just because I don't know. It wasn't there. It wasn't like it's a kid's story, mm-hmm. which is naturally going to be pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like the story they were telling, right? Obviously the more interesting story, at least for me, was the real life story that was going on.
Well, that's what I like about it, is that it creeps up on you. It starts kind of simple, and then it kind of creeps up on you, where it's like, you know, the guy is kind of also kind of controlling the story too, and it's kind of,
yeah, this is kind of what I was saying before, was that they're kind of influencing it together, mm-hmm. like she's guiding it and influencing it,
yeah.
with her childlike sensibilities and stuff like that, but the he's injecting it with like depression and mm-hmm. and things that I thought was cool.
Yeah,
I thought that was neat. However, it didn't feel like it was tackling something that had a topics that had depth to them, but it wasn't going very in depth into anything. It felt like it was really just kind of dabbing in many different storytelling methods or ways of telling the story. It wasn't going very deep into anything in particular. Mm-hmm. It felt very superficial and surface level for me, which is fine. Like nothing always, it doesn't always have to be so in depth all the time. No. It can just be entertaining. Which is why I still enjoyed it. However, it for me, it felt like it didn't want to commit to anything 100%. Like it didn't want to go for it for at least one thing, right? It just wanted to be easygoing, which...
To kind of just leave itself open to interpretation.
Yeah, which...
A bit safe,
it played it safe, I felt. I feel like that... Yeah, I'd agree with that. Mm. Just, I feel like... Yeah, maybe they took, they didn't want to, yeah, they wanted it to appeal to maybe a wider audience or something. I'm not sure. It just felt like it was very safe. The other thing that kind of stuck out to me was the child actor. Mm-hmm. So, looking at it, I kept getting pulled out whether I liked it or not, just because it felt like, oh my God, they must be trying to direct her so hard right now. Like, is she doing this on purpose, or is this just her being a kid not being able to fucking concentrate on anything? Like on the delivering the lines, I was trying to follow what she's saying. And I'm like, I totally get that there are kids that talk like that, but there are a whole lot of other kids as well who don't talk like that as well.
I did read that most of her lines were ad-libbed. I
totally could see that. Yeah. That's the problem. And that's why I kept pulling me out when that happened, because I'm like,
they were trying to go for a more realistic kid. But...
Yeah. But then I was like, oh, why did you keep this take? Mm. Why could you not have like, hey, if you got to do it like 50 times to get it, then do it 50 times. But like, if she's just going in circles, or like if you're having your adult actor having to repeat his same line, the bread line. That's the one. If you're wondering which one really sticks out to me, it's the whole bread line. Hey, where'd you get the bread? He's saying the thing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I'm like, yeah, shut the fuck up, move on. Like, she's not gonna get it, okay?
Give me the morphine now.
You know, and I'm not gonna fault a kid for being a kid, but it reminded me as soon as that was happening, I first started thinking, oh yeah, never work with animals or kids.
Or on water.
There's a prime example of why, you know, that's a saying, right? Yep. So like that was probably my biggest criticism. Everything else, because I actually did, the other stuff was really minor. I actually still enjoyed it. Mm. But that child actor, sometimes I found it difficult to be engaged with her character just because of, it felt like she was acting. It felt like she was being asked to do something, which doesn't come across as natural,
right,
which pulls me out of the film and into the real world of this is a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my biggest issue. It was I would have to put it primarily on her.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you entirely.
Just blame it on the 5-year-old, no big deal.
Yeah, because I think...
I hate children.
Yeah.
That's what we had to come down to. It's like, Andrew, just admit it.
Right.
Come on.
But I thought stuff like the bread scene was kind of funny, though, because of that. Even though I get what you're saying.
Dude, it was frustrating
for
me,
actually.
I don't know. I had found it kind of endearing.
Yeah.
Especially just because he, like, the Lee Pace, like, never loses his patience.
It just keeps
going. And to me that feels more authentic for the characters,
right?
He's dealing with two strangers, yeah, with nothing in common, kind of bonding.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like even he was getting annoyed at a certain point, you know, like I could even like hear it in his line delivery, you know,
but just go back and pinpoint it like
the bread. Like, I want to go back. I do want to totally go back. He's just like the bread. Like,
and there's
bread.
Where he loses
like,
faith.
The bread. Like, I'm giving you signs of what I'm trying to explain. Like, it's like an adult who's finally fucking fed up. Like, parents who've just finally lost their shit. Like, you know how you're like, you're like a parent and everybody's like, they're so cute, but you're over it, you know? You're like, yeah, they were, but I've been a parent for too long. That's what it felt like.
So you're already jaded of being a parent, is what you're saying.
Yes.
I'm aware, okay? I'm just aware, you know?
You just don't like dumb kids,
that's
man.
That's right. That's how you stop yourself from doing anything shitty to your kids. It's just know and be prepared.
You show me a 5-year-old who knows what a Eucharist is. Like,
I didn't know what that was. Yeah. No, but he was explaining it pretty well, too. He was saying the bread. He just said the bread, the thing you put in my mouth, the thing you just gave me.
You just saved my soul.
I think bread is also a pretty big stretch as well for that little thing.
It's a cracker. It's a cracker.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. That's,
you know what?
A more apt description.
You're right. It's on him. Why would you call that bread, you fucking moron? You're an adult. You should know better.
Listen, he's going through a lot.
If you're
going
to attempt to speak
straight,
a child's language, you actually have to.
He spells morphine with a 3. Come on.
Yeah, what an idiot. That was cute, right? So I wasn't always shitting on her. That was actually
based off a real life blooper too. The E and the three thing.
That was cute. I liked that because then I was like, oh, that's cool. And that's something like a kid would do. They'd be like, well, you asked for 3. And I'm like, that's cool. That's like a mind of a child thing where like you would never think to go there, but only a kid would ever go there.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. And you can like see him too, like beforehand, like, oh, she thinks it's a 3, like whatever. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't,
like, he didn't think there were going to be consequences.
That's going to be important later. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever, she'll get it. And like, oh no, she took that too literally.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I think for me, it was just some of the scenes because she's so prominent that obviously they can't work their magic all the time. And then when the times where they didn't, it stuck out to me. So for that, it was a bit of a negative for me. Like, when you were saying like 60 on tomatoes, like I was thinking like 70 would be like fair, or at least I think it would be fair. Like as far as critic scores would go. And then obviously your mileage will vary. I think everybody's obviously,
right,
there would be variation between there. So I could see somebody going up to like an 8 or a 9, but I just don't see this being like a fucking amazing movie, like a 10 out of 10 kind of thing. But
in any regard other than visuals.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Is it in terms of visuals? Yeah. 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I'll give it that.
Child acting, 10 out of 10. There's a version of this movie in my head
well,
right now.
I don't
now.
Know. Maybe I've watched too much Stranger Things or something. Okay. I'm just used to like
yeah,
really
yeah,
good
yeah, okay, I'll give you
children.
That. Yeah,
there's,
yeah. You
know? There's a version of this film in my head where Andrew plays Roy and Tommy Wiseau plays the little girl.
Oh my God.
And it plays
wow.
the exact same.
Your
take
mind.
All of my
See,
money
I'll,
this
I'll
time.
And he's like, gets so mad.
I wouldn't get mad. I
get so mad in the bed.
You spell it with a three.
I could never be mad at Tommy if I see.
I told you what the fucking bread is, okay? Don't
no,
you get
he,
it?
He'd just be like,
can they kiss?
You're so crazy.
They're so crazy. They kiss.
No, I need
Make
the drugs.
Kiss.
Okay. Don't. Yeah, Chris R shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how she gets the drugs. Yeah.
Where's my fucking morphine, Diddy?
Morphine. Yeah. You only gave me three.
It's only gonna make me have a nap.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I don't want to shit all over the movie, but like, I don't want it to come across as that's what I'm doing, because like, I'm not. I'm like, I'm still in the positive. I'm not in the mediocre space.
So
I'm in the positive. But,
you know now how
I
feel
probably,
from the last episode.
I'm probably the weakest. I could tell right away I'm probably the
you're,
weakest.
You're not shitting on it. You're just kind of browning a surface.
Sure. I'm taking the torch and you know, burning the top. That's
yeah.
it, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like spilling
brulee,
coffee,
you know?
You know?
Shit, yeah, just yeah. like the movie. Yeah. Yes. Look at you.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, those are my thoughts, so... I'm ready to hear everybody else's overwhelming praise.
Indeed, Alex. Maybe when you're done throwing oranges at priests, you can tell us what you thought of the movie.
Can you throw oranges at him?
After he takes his teeth out, yeah.
Yeah!
Great scene.
That guy was pretty good. I like that guy.
The old guy?
The old
yeah,
guy.
He was pretty good.
That's right.
Googity, googity, googity.
That's right. He was Mr. Grandparent there.
Yeah.
A typical yep. grandparent.
See, and grandparents know how to deal with,
yeah.
with kids. So
totally.
Maybe he should have been telling
yeah,
the story.
Yeah, what the fuck? Right?
But he had
choice.
To die. He had to die because it
he
tells
had to be
life
the,
life.
Grandpa
he's
dying
the red
is
herring.
Sad, and it
he's
makes sense.
Yeah, his character's name is Red Herring, so...
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Oh.
Now, I feel like there just needs to be a character named Red Herring.
Oh, of course there should
well, they
be.
Had, like red coats in Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah, but the
like
red
that,
the
right?
character
so...
named Red Herring should actually be the villain, just to throw it completely off. It's
That'd
like a
crazy.
Layer upon a layer of throwing people off.
Shit. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Hire me, Hollywood.
So aside from the visual aspect, which was quite impressive, and I can understand why the long lenses were used, because you're telling a story to a child, and of course in the child's mind, it's going to be a big grandiose story. And if you can remember being a child, and I can, watching movie like I watched some of the James Bond movies recently, just clips from like The Living Daylights or A View to a Kill, and some of those fight scenes... For some reason, I remember them as being way better than when I recently saw them.
Sure.
So I can understand why the two stories that Roy told were displayed in such a big dramatic manner. And it did help to make the story interesting. But aside from just watching the movie and paying attention to what was going on, like there are always two layers to a movie if it's a good filmmaker. And I'm not smart enough to figure out what that second layer was. I did look at a bunch of film analysis videos, so I have an idea of what to look for, like how the camera moves around and maybe it makes a shape, or look at what's in the background, look at where things are placed, question on why the camera is pointing to a certain thing, why the angle is where it is, why there might be... intentional continuity mistakes, like The Shining, for example.
Right.
There's one glaring one in there, but it's there for a reason. I'm not smart enough to figure out what the second layer of this film was. I think there's quite clearly a second layer, especially when she's going to get the morphine. She falls, she hits her head. At that point, where there are all those visuals and they're kind of like yeah stop
yeah.
motion. I was going to say puppeteer for some
I
reason
totally
but it was
forgot about that
it was yeah. Tool, it was another Tool music video
yeah
tarsome Tool
well that makes sense
that explains everything yeah.
But once you see that, you should get an idea of this is not just a linear story. At least that's what I thought. It's not just straightforward. There's something more to it. Overall, I thought it was a great film. When you have a story like this where it's two people developing a relationship in a hospital, like they're both on the same level because they're both sick or injured, just like in the first story that Roy told about Alexander the Great. Everyone's in the desert. Alexander dumps out the water to show that they are all on the same level. They are all equal. It's the same in the hospital. Everyone's there. Everyone's got some sort of illness and sickness. So there's that, but I'm not smart enough to be able to put anything else together. This is one of those films, just like any Kubrick film, you got to watch over and over and over and over again, because you'll eventually pick out little things that maybe make sense, maybe you can put together, but then again, it's open to interpretation. Maybe it is just a linear story. I have no idea, but I was entertained by it. I found it fun to watch. I think the five-year-old, because I've dealt with kids and I can understand why you would be frustrated, Andrew. I myself was very frustrated dealing with kids. Believe me, when you tell them something over and over and over and over again and they still don't get it,
yeah
I can understand that the blood's boiling up inside you. But as a parent, when you've dealt with it a long, long time, you just...
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm watching a movie, though.
Yeah, so was I, but I still felt frustrated at that Eucharist scene too.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
That's the thing, man. Yeah. It's like, I'm watching a movie. I don't need that. That shit's real life. I don't.
It was getting too close.
You can make that a little easier for me.
I think they could have cut that scene down to where he just explains it once, but it had to be left there for a reason, where he explains it over and over and over to. It has to be there for a reason.
Yeah.
Because the movie they could have cut it. And it's that
they
simple. They could have cut
his patience or something. The idea that he's developing relationship.
Weight to that scene and kind of lingering on it to acknowledge that, oh, she took something she wasn't supposed to. She can be persuaded to
important.
Do it again.
Yeah. That's why. Of course. Because obviously that makes sense. Because he needed to get her to go do stuff similar to that.
It's supposed to be one of those. It is like a hint / setup disguised as a throwaway scene.
So do you think it's one of those scenes where they just couldn't get a really good take out of her for that specific one? Right? Because he kept saying that word and she's like, what the fuck is that word? Like, she's a kid. She doesn't know that.
See, I see it like this, is that because she's such a young kid and that she doesn't have a full grasp of how the world is like, and what that scene is supposed to show, and it comes back later, as we've talked about with her asking her to do things for her, and she doesn't quite get it. It's just those earlier scenes are for us, the audience, and for the characters, to get an idea that she's still young. She has no idea how the real world works. So it's almost adding a little bit of suspense to it, you know, a little bit, just to kind of add you know, because we think it's a throwaway line, the morphine 3, but then at first it's a throwaway. But then when you see when she does it, it comes back that we have to really talk to her because she's a kid. It's enforcing the notion that of the relationship, and also just again, she doesn't understand. She's just going along with the flow, and he's manipulating her mind through stories and all that. So it just kind of, I just felt like her acting as a kid just kind of added layers to it, because she was a smart kid, she would have seen through all this shit.
Sure.
But her being a naive, not knowing anything, complete, like not fully educated, just basically sees the world as she sees it. I think.
I mean, this is a poor young girl from an immigrant family who you know should be in like kindergarten or grade one, has to go to work picking fruit instead.
Yeah, she just drops the whole thing like, oh yeah, my dad's dead. Oh.
And like, oh yeah, and my house got burned. Like,
yeah, she doesn't fully grasp the
notion. Like these horrors that have happened in her life, she just accepts them as fact because she doesn't know any better.
So like when I see those moments of her like struggling and the adults are Lee Pace trying to reach out to her and all that, I think that's important for at least the story for her character, because it's again enforcing that she's innocent. She's naive. She doesn't know.
But you also can't understand her a portion of the time.
Well, English isn't her first
language.
Is
a decent percentage of the time where you're basically just trying really much harder than you actually would with a kid who's incoherent. trying to understand every word she's trying to say or all the words coming out of her mouth, because she's literally the only one talking on screen, and you can't, right? So like, that's a little bit frustrating. Is you're not even getting the dialogue, it's just gibberish.
Right? I will say though that since I have seen this more than once, her performance definitely does
she's cute.
Oh, it gets way better every time you see it, because you can sort of see, you kind of, at first you're kind of like, oh, okay, this is what I have to sit through now. And this is okay. You're not quite sure if this is a bad kid performance, but at times she's fucking great. So at first it's a little bit like you don't know how to deal with it. But when you first see it a second time, when you get past that wave of like, I'm dealing with this, you know, gibberish child act, and even like her writing is gibberish.
Yeah,
you don't know what she's saying.
They're saying
she doesn't know how, she can't understand her. Yeah, what are you writing? It's part of her character. It's definitely, I think, deliberate more so than anything. Because why would they hold on those shots?
Yeah,
it's very deliberate. That's why I feel like it's not a mistake or just a child thing or anything like that. I feel like this
do you
was
think
done
it's
on
one
purpose.
Of those things though where like
I'm pretty sure
was,
they chose an actor
like
that because
hey,
it worked.
And it
we chose all of this, or oh, we adapted some of this because of the actor, and the actor shaped this character, because the actor shapes the character.
Well,
a
yeah,
lot
we've
of
already
times,
brought
right?
up a couple examples of how like they adapted the role in the story to fit her performance, so it could very well be a mixture
of like he's saying the writing and all that. I'm like, they could have adapted that to kind of match her the way she was performing.
I'm sure to a degree they did.
Well, hey,
right?
because she
talks that way, and you're like, she would write also that even less so, because writing is more difficult.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing I think about too is this was filmed over 4 years, so obviously they shot her stuff.
That's crazy.
First
that was a crazy.
After.
Like tidbit,
she would grow.
Actually,
she'd be like,
you definitely see the difference.
Yeah, that was the thing. If she, they would have to film all her stuff first or last.
Yeah,
because of the rest of the stuff they have to shoot, she's not there because she would have aged like considerably.
Oh yeah,
she'd be able to talk normal.
Well, so she's also only in a portion of the like, epic story.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
Right?
So,
then I guess they could have. Yeah, and that stuff probably is what took most of the time, right? The stuff where they had to shoot on location at all these
well, the 28 different countries
and stuff. Yeah.
A lot of those like location shots are like, you got to find the perfect time, the perfect date in order to shoot there.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
the perfect
shower,
lighting, the perfect weather, not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah, this is as you were saying, this is true Kubrick in terms of getting the shot.
And also, and also, like, imagine how much time like they must have like spent like getting their angles and like actually composing the shots before actually bringing in the whole crew to shoot it.
Everything
looks like a painting, like that's the thing, right? Like every shot in that story, it's like super well framed and just like the color's perfect, and it's crazy.
That would make sense though as to why it was filmed over 4 years, because even with storyboarding, if you don't have your locations, then you're basically just going out there and doing it on the fly, like improv. Okay, here's where we're gonna shoot. What do we do? Well, get the lens and let's look at it and see where we should set up.
This shot from China matches with this shot in India, so we have to make sure these things match, because they would cut back and forth like on the spot from one shot to the next, and somehow it all works and flows. Like that's you know, that takes a long time.
It does, but again, visually looks great. I like the story. I think it's something that's got to be seen more than once, again, to understand more than just what you see. So, good pick.
Thanks. Yeah, this is my second time seeing it, and I already like want to see it again, too, because, I've picked out a bunch more details this time that I missed the first time, and I feel like there's going to be a bunch more the third, fourth, and fifth times. Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, so I can probably say safely I probably saw this first out of probably the bunch of us.
You showed me and then Rylan and now these boys.
It was nice seeing this again, just because definitely it's one of those movies that whenever people bring up like, well, what would you suggest me watching, I always actually tend to bring up The Fall at some point.
When did you first fall for this movie?
Back in 2009. It was in Langley, BC. It was at my buddy Matt Hall's house, shout out to Matt Hall. And we were watching a bunch of movies. I can remember the other movie we watched paired up with this one. We watched two movies. The other one was Funny Games.
Oh, that's a perfect double bill.
The American version, which I'm just going to go on a limb, sucks.
Yeah, not a bad
But The Fall was the next one. And oh, good God, just from the first frame, I was like, way better. And Beethoven doesn't help either. So, you know, it's good shit.
Yeah.
But overall, seeing it again, like... as you were saying, you would pick up on new things the second time or third time around you come and watch it. And I definitely did. There was a lot of little tiny things now I was picking up more on, like, the things that connect reality with her imagination. And I really like just seeing the constant him updating as he's going along.
Yeah.
Like, he'll say something and all of a sudden he'll turn French, you know?
Yeah, they'll adjust.
Yeah, the slight adjustments. Yeah. And it very much captures ultimately what this film, I think, is really showcasing. And why I don't, like, this might sound a little weird, but I don't think this movie really has a plot, per se.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
doesn't really, and honestly, yeah. if it did, I think it would have been worse. Mm-hmm. Because it's such a stream of consciousness throughout the whole movie, of it being, he's telling a story, and it's to a kid, so obviously the kid is going to interrupt and want to make changes, and they show that. But I love the, again, paralleling it with his, you know, depression and him getting over his girl leaving him for a richer dude and all that. And also with her own, you know, facing reality and like how, oh, there is going to be hardships and all that. Like when they're having that final bit where it's going dark and all that, it's like almost the first time she's sort of taking the full grasp of just the world. And it's there almost like her first true dark moment mm-hmm. that she's experiencing. And, you know, just saying like, no. And they're just, I just loved how they talked to each other. This is why I was a little surprised by your reaction, just a little bit. Because I thought that was honestly the funniest parts. Because, you know, when they would stop telling the story and they would just all saying, get them keys. Just yeah. those little tiny things were just fantastic because they're just so endearing and they're charming.
And they're nicely timed.
Yeah. And right? the one thing about this movie.
Yeah, I understood that though.
Yeah. I'm not saying you didn't understand anything
those,
like that.
Those lines landed because.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing about this movie too, is that, and kind of going off what you were saying, this is one of those types of movies where the whole thing is told visually. It's a visual movie.
Definitely.
Every cut tells is like lines of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Every frame kind of tells a story. You can watch this. I love how they both begin and end this movie, much like a silent film, because you could put this whole movie in black and white and watch it without any dialogue and know exactly what's happening.
And that works with the era too, that it takes part.
That's
in, right?
I think that's sort of what they were going for, except now you have color, so you can you know, do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
And I love the editing of this film, too. I think that's one thing that's not given enough praise. I know we talk about the visuals and the cinematography, but hey, someone's got to pick those shots
sure.
and line them up in order to work. Like the one shot that is ingrained in my head is that transition from that priest's face, and then all of a sudden it cuts to a mountain, but it's perfectly aligned with the guy's face. So it's almost like it morphs to the mountain.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys caught that, but...
yeah, that was stunning. And you can almost see it like burned onto the screen too.
Yeah.
You can see where it was.
Yeah,
and I love how it's the people like forming like the shadows that would be the eyes.
If you missed that, it's one of those like holy shit when you actually see it, because it's one of those perfect match cuts.
The other transition shot from the pinned butterfly to the island.
Yeah. Actually, I forgot about that one until I just saw it. I was like, oh yeah, that shit's sick.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, the face to the mountainside one is like, oh, it's so sinister.
I just remember that was one of the first things when I first saw it that. Again, my buddy Brandon was like, "What? Oh, you gotta see this shot. You gotta see this shot." I'm like, "Okay." And then when it happened, it
I
was
can
like,
"See, Brandon,
whoa!
Freaking out about that."
And yeah, I just feel like, and kind of going off of like the Tarsem as a filmmaker, one of his biggest criticisms is the stories are shit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his films are just are like art house, you know, porn.
Yeah.
But then there's no substance to it.
art house is cool, man.
Yeah.
Like I dig some art house.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
art porn different. Shit.
Like you probably know by now, for me, story is king.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. For me, that's the biggest.
There's a difference between story and plot
element.
Though.
Yeah.
And you know, this is really much just like, okay, it's about a girl and the guy who are both recovering in a hospital, and they're telling stories. There's not a plot. It's telling, okay, then this happens, therefore this happens, and this leads to happens because this character's doing this. That's adding a plot. But this one is, you strip it all bare. It's just him telling a story, and then you see through the visuals and also just little basic looks or like one line, like says, just enough for a nap. Little things like that. That alone says he wants to kill himself.
Yeah.
And also, I love those little tiny touches and just... how it, yeah, no, there's just a lot of, the more you watch it and the more you kind of cut back to it, there's just a lot more you can take out of it each time, yeah. Which I think is the biggest strength to this movie, is that at first you're kind of like, okay, yeah, it's great to look at, but what is there much mm-hmm. to it? Even I first saw it, I was like, yeah, no, it was great looking, but I don't know, the kid was a little annoying at times and all that. I even said that at first. That's everyone's usual first impression. But then the more you see it, the more like things that may have bugged you the first time really don't bug you. And actually, they're a little bit more like, if you see it differently, it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But no, I've seen it again. I think it's great. Definitely think it should be a lot more recognized than it currently is. Okay. But, you know... You know, David Fincher and Spike Jonze, they got to do a better job of producing, man.
Yeah, I'm promoting that.
Yeah, yeah, come
promoting
on.
Especially. Like, yeah. Come on, 3.7 million, what is that?
That's a joke. I know.
Like, didn't, cost. Like, Fincher and Nolan, like, I remember, like, them, they presented Tree of Life, I think, when
yeah,
that came out.
They did.
And that made money. It's like, come on, man. Come on, get some Tarsim in here.
Well, Brad Pitt and Sean Penn were in Tree of Life, so to be fair,
oh, yeah,
they had
yeah, yeah.
that star the names attached yeah. to right. it.
And Jessica mm-hmm. Chastain, actually, that was her breakout role, was in Tree of
really?
Life.
Really?
Was
yeah,
it actually,
yeah.
actually that
yeah,
one?
Yeah, that was the one that actually got her known. Hmm. She did films, obviously, prior to that, yeah. but that was her first, like, oh, who's this? And then, of course...
I felt like I had seen her before, though.
But that's the thing we had, but that was her, like, that was her sort of, like... Hollywood knocking on the door.
Put her on
yeah,
the mask
wasn't
type
she,
of thing.
No, she wasn't nominated for The Help, but she was in The Help.
I think it came out the same year.
No, it was earlier.
Well, she
it? Or maybe it was the same year.
Bryce Dallas Howard was in that, and people get that
oh, they do
stuff
get them,
all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah,
exactly. They both were, though. She was the... No. Bryce Dallas Howard was the evil one in... Jessica Chastain, she was the nice one who
right.
just happens to be stuck in the wrong place.
Yeah.
She got nominated for that, though.
She did get nominated.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I wasn't crazy.
That was the same year. Yeah, 2011?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the same year. Those two, both movies came out. Okay. And then the next year, she did Zero Dark Thirty, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
Something like that. And then, of course, she was off to the races after
everything,
that.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Deservedly so. She's quite talented.
Mm. Oh, yeah. No, I definitely like her a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, she's definitely one of the best actresses out there.
Yeah.
Right now, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just not in this.
Not
movie.
In the fall.
Yeah, we're kind of falling away from the topic of the fall.
Yeah, we don't really. This is not really movie jam packed with big names. Even like the crew is pretty much limited to other Tarsim films for the most part. Like, he seems to have his little entourage.
He's
who follows
like,
him from project to project.
He is a little bit like a wannabe Kubrick, though, because Kubrick was known for having his own small niche crew because, of course,
like
someone
else I know.
Hey, you know.
But we won't mention names.
Yeah, I know. It's all good.
So, Jeff.
Yeah.
You're talking about Tommy Wiseau, right?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Tommy, yeah.
Oh, hi, crew.
Yeah.
Bye,
just...
crew.
You're fired,
yeah.
crew. No
yeah.
water for you, crew.
Tommy, make more movies.
He is.
Yeah, best friends. Best friends, man.
Yeah, the part two's coming out.
Well, he didn't direct it.
No,
though.
He didn't.
That's what I mean. He needs to direct something.
Oh,
else.
I see.
He's got to. It's got to be in a tour
his
movie.
His real magnum opus has yet to be unleashed.
Yeah.
Upon us.
A lot of people have said that Tommy Wiseau is the last American auteur director. I've been hearing because the whole auteur director is sort of fading, you know, the auteur. He's the last true auteur.
He's the final one.
I've watched
that.
That
is great.
I've seen that argument.
I love that.
And
it's a good argument.
It is. Hey.
And it's
actually,
like the one movie, too. It's like we have one film,
and
that's the one that ended
that's
it.
Because honestly, who else could make that movie but him?
Right.
He is the author. He is the auteur of that film.
That's
and
great.
And whenever I heard the argument for it, you know what? It was like...
And I love how it's considered the American auteur.
Yeah.
I love that too.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he barely comes across as like American. You're like, are you sure?
That's wonderful.
But he says he's
American and no one can prove anything
that's
different.
That's right,
he's
from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Nolans.
So
yeah, that's right.
Didn't he on Kimmel admit he was from Europe and everyone was like, whoa,
but then he backtracked it, I think, and he said like, no, like, I originally, but like, I'm really grew up here.
Oh, well, I think that we know. Like,
I mean, that's fine, but you know, he came from Europe.
So next time on Wiseau's Chronicles,
the real planet of origin.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Was she as coherent as Tommy Wiseau? Or, like, if we're doing a comparison,
I don't think she had the dumber lines, you know?
She had the dumber... Yeah.
All his lines were, like, dubbed.
Yep.
You know, I can't say how, any of her... Like, she maybe mumbled through lines, but at least it worked.
She did, yeah. I think for... Yeah, that was what I was saying by hard to understand, though. It's but also, mumbling through lines.
But English wasn't her first language. Yeah, and yeah. I think that's part of the whole thing,
I totally
too.
Get where you're coming from, though, Andrew, because that was, like... I think there's even some lists where they have, like, worst child actor performances. And I do think I've seen her on one. Because,
like, it's just... It's little things like this. And I'm like... Like, you know, I'm not going to be one of those dicks that goes up to the kid, enunciate, but like, man.
And she would say, what?
I'm watching a movie.
Yeah, or like.
I keep going back to that.
Yeah. No. You're not alone on that. So that's why I don't think it's far of a reach for you.
Because when you're a parent, a lot of times you just filter out a lot of that. Right?
Yeah.
Because you have to, you'll go crazy if you're trying to understand everything, because it's hard for your adult brain to wrap around that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing. Only a child could create, you know, sounds like that, even just because they're learning, right? And then that's your job, is it to be a teacher, and that's the whole point. But not when you're watching a film, right? Parents filter that out. They'll sit there and their kids will say a bunch of stuff and they'll just hit the highlights. That's why you'll see a lot of parents who just get the highlights of what their kids are saying.
Would you rather
but watch, I'm watching a movie. I don't just want the highlights. I want the plot or the dialogue or whatever, you know? Like, I
you
want
just
the
don't
want
to sit there sitting, struggling as an actor, trying to get through their lines. You know, that's
what it felt like.
It's a little uncomfortable at times. You're just like, can we get on with it, man?
It is.
Can we use a take six instead of take five? You know, get on with it.
Sure, man. That's what editing is for, right? You're supposed to be able to, like, make that shit better.
So if we remake The Fall, you're directing this shit, right?
No, he's acting in it. I already said that.
Oh,
acting.
Right.
He's in the bed.
No, acting,
he's
directing,
and
producing.
He's just more furious. It's the same thing. He's just more angry.
So
that's the difference.
Oh, so same child actor. It's just me being pissed off
exactly.
all the time.
Same child actor. She's now in her 20s, so that's how it's going to work.
And she still talks like that,
but
boy,
exact same.
She needs some help if that's the case.
And instead of a Eucharist, it's pizza.
Ooh,
yeah. Pizza.
Oh, then I'm fine with that. If she's feeding me pizza, that'll keep me calm. You know.
You're trying to save my soul one slice at a time. Thank you.
And you'll have like a box. It'll be like Domino's or something, like just to get that promotion money.
As long as it ain't Papa John's. Mm, oh,
there you go.
Back to a dark place.
I will say though, I will say, even like when you watch a movie, I completely forgot about that stop motion animated bit.
I did too.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, I was just like, oh yeah, this is awesome.
I know, I completely
I completely forgot about that.
And it's not very long. It's
no,
very short.
I remember everything else, like just the big landscaping shots, and you see like your five Power Rangers standing in line. Now that you said that, I can't leave my mind.
it's
dead on. You know, you got your Sailor Scouts or your Power Rangers,
right.
Either or it works.
Yeah.
Charles Darwin is Pepto Bismol. Is that what
you
said?
I'm glad you were listening earlier on. I did say that. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt.
No.
I'm
that's
glad
good shit.
That just popped up now. But yes, I did say that earlier.
I am curious though, Alex. What do you feel like you're not smart enough to pick up on this? I feel like
that's what I'm wondering.
I'm wondering.
Too,
it's like what
like,
do you feel like is there?
Do you feel like you're digging into something that's not there?
Absolutely,
no,
I do.
No,
yeah.
No, I feel like there's something there that maybe just we didn't catch up on, or maybe stuff that
I don't like feel like it's like a Kubrick film where like holy fuck you can just spend entire courses just digging into this and it just never ends, because he actually was crazy. He was an insane guy who created masterpieces.
Yes, like every single shot there. Yeah, like I'm sorry to interrupt. In the Shining, there's a shot where it's following Jack, and Jack is facing away from the camera, and Jack is turning to the left, so the camera is following him, and on the floor you see a teddy bear.
Yeah.
And for anyone who hasn't seen The Shining, I'm sorry, but I'm going to spoil it. The teddy bear represents, what was the name of Scatman Crothers' character?
Oh, shit.
It's been a while.
Yeah, so really? Scatman Crothers, the actor in there, the teddy bear foreshadows his death.
Right.
Okay.
Like little things like that. And then
that's the thing though. He was such a stickler for everything. Like he was like crazy about it, right? Like he's notorious. He was known for that.
Dick Halloran.
Yes, oh, Halloran, Halloran. That's right. And when the shot is zooming in on Halloran in the fridge or the pantry, and on the shelves behind him, there are the cans, and the cans have the American Indian on it. The slaughter of the American Indians played a big hidden theme in the film.
Yes.
That actually, there's a little bit of... that's the thing about... Yeah, we can go on that Kubrick tangent forever, because even like some of those famous like stories, because like, I know exactly what you're talking about, the Native American, it's on the can of food behind Jack as he's locked in the freezer and all that. However, I was told that a lot of the Native American stuff, or like symbolism or all that stuff, is a bunk. Because actually Kubrick picked out that particular can of whatever food because of its color, and it looked nice.
Okay, so then you have to look at color. What did the color mean
see,
to him?
See, yeah, that's the thing, though. There's things that he was alluding to, and things he was, like, there's actually a theme of twins all throughout the film, besides just the two girls. There's also, like, funny enough, when Dick Halloran is laying in bed, he finds out there's usually two lampposts set up that are identical. There's two things side by side when... Jack is going for his interview, and he's sitting in the table, and there's like two American flags. There's a bunch of like tiny visual cues to things, visual callbacks to certain shots.
It feels like with him, it's like everything in its place is how the way he directed, right? Everything in a scene is, nothing's just there. It's thought about. He at least thought about everything that's there, whether it's as deep as we think it is. Because there are a lot of ridiculous, especially with The Shining, there are a lot of kind of over-the-top analysis. So, however, I still like, but the explanation could be as simple as, no, that was there because it fit a color scheme he wanted for this. But it's still thought out, right?
Yeah.
It's the point I'm making, that this is really well thought out. But I don't know if I can give like a movie like this that level of credit for depth.
I
feel like... maybe digging into like a little much. I feel like it wanted to be straightforward. I think that's what it was going for.
See, this is where I feel like both of you have had like definitely a say in that, because I think you're right. I don't think there is enough layers in this film compared to, say, a Kubrick film.
Well, that's a hard bar.
I know that's a hard bar, but I think the reason why is that Kubrick, he's known for his visual mastery and all that.
Totally.
But also with his storytelling techniques, and also just with his characters and all those symbolisms, and just how he uses it.
Everything's at a 10 in his movie. Whereas, even if you're not looking for that stuff as a moviegoer, like a regular moviegoer can go see it and they'll totally get a lot out of the film.
Yeah.
So whereas it appeals to a lot.
Yeah. Whereas Tarson is definitely a much more visual substance, but not much emotional.
Which is why
substance.
I thought that was great.
I was going to say style over substance.
That's
more
it. Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Because a lot of his work does get slapped with the label of pretentious.
Yeah, and this is considered his best film.
Yeah.
So his other films, like I know a lot about The Selves because I've seen reviews of it.
I've seen it.
And dear God, that movie is just weird.
It's weird, and it's not that
Again,
great.
Visually stunning, but weird, and also probably more famous just because it has Jennifer Lopez in it.
Right.
And Vince Vaughn.
But we don't talk about his
and
part.
And Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, it's crazy man with the blonde wig.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so that's that. Yeah, when you're comparing, because I think Kubrick is actually one of a good comparison with Tarson, just given, like I said, visually
in terms of the meticulousness.
Yeah, meticulousness, his shot selection, his editing, and how like even shots that almost look like a mistake, all of a sudden they work. Like the one transition I also like is when they fall into like water or something like that, and then the water hits the lens.
Yeah.
And you think that's a mistake, but all of a sudden the matter that's on the lens also morphs into the next shot. And you're just like, you thought of that. You thought of the lens getting covered in mud, and that's how you're gonna try to
That's where you can
that's
you
genius.
Can analyze it and you can look into it. Visually it's very well done.
See, that shit,
which
like,
is why I had nothing to say about that. Nothing to say about
it. Oh,
it's
been said.
It's good.
Yeah, that's probably really,
it puts
great.
His music video background to good use.
Oh,
sure.
Oh, when you said when he did like Losing My Religion,
like
I was like that.
Sense.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, completely. Yeah. And that is a folly for a lot of music video directors who go into filmmaking, is that, you know, when you're making a music video, it's all about the visuals.
It's all visual.
And now all of a sudden, Michael Bay is a good example of that, as someone who just went all out on visuals but didn't pick up on.
Isn't Michael Bay's only visual motif an explosion though?
with an American flag.
Hey, man.
And helicopters flying in the background.
And a 21-year-old in short shorts.
I was about to say,
But then you have the other side of the spectrum when you have David Fincher, who is also a music video director, and he took those skills and utilized them in his films, and of course, he has his own style. Yep. You know, there are like 2 fucking million video analysis David Fincher. Yeah. And you can spend a week watching them, and they're all good because there's something new to his layers too. He's also another... he falls in line of how Kubrick, I think even more so just with how much perfectionist David Fincher is. Like he did 99 takes for one scene as well. He's known for doing 50-40 takes all the time, making sure the shot is perfect. Even like when I hear stuff, I'm like, oh my God, that's worse than Kubrick.
Yeah.
Because the meticulous of like movement, like he moves each camera with like that, as subtle as that, because... his camera moves to the characters so precisely. It's scary at times, and you can understand why certain things take forever and why he's okay with using digital effects, because he knows how long he's going to take, so he doesn't want to waste time. Like he'll CGI all the blood pouring from, like, I could go to Dragon Tattoo. There's a shot where he's bleeding profusely, and they keep trying to stitch it up. All that CGI, because they know that, hey, this is going to take forever to clean up. I want my take, so we're going to do this later.
Yeah.
And that's because of all the years he worked at ILM doing visual effects for Star Wars and all that. He became a craftsman. He knows his stuff. And he produced this film, too, so I can see why he was gravitated towards it. I actually would like to know more about Spike Jonze's involvement in this film.
Well, he's also a visual kind of guy, too.
But his visual style is, like, very unique.
Yes.
Yeah. I just saw...
What'd you watch?
Yeah, I've only seen 2 films of his.
What did I see? There's
Her. That's the most...
Her was the most well-known.
There was also Being John Malkovich.
Well, that's a very visual film.
Adaptation. The one with Nicolas Cage?
And Kaufman or whatever.
Charlie Kaufman or whatever. It also has Meryl Streep in it. Yeah, adaptation.
Adaptation.
And then Where the Wild Things Are.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
The children's book one.
Yeah. The Arcade Fire music video? No, it was Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, the music video. Oh.
Well, didn't Arcade Fire do music for...
No, it was just in the trailer. I'm just...
Oh, you're just... Because I haven't seen the movie, so
it was
I don't know.
Oh, shit. I'm blanking on the song. It was Wake Up.
Yeah.
I think I know the song you're talking about now, because...
I just got confused because Arcade Fire did the songs and stuff for her. Soundtrack is...
That's true.
Reflector.
And then Spike Jonze, of course, did all the Jackass films as well.
Oh, well, yeah. He's heavily involved with them. He's almost like a hidden member.
He played one of the old ladies.
That's right.
With like her dress hanging out. Oh, can you help me get a dress? That's Spike Jonze.
Yeah, he's in a few of the stuff.
No, I think he was the one who actually got it on TemTV.
Well, he did.
He was their connection.
Exactly. Well, he's featured even in Jackass 3D. He's in the credits because like they're showing all the pictures and Weezer's playing like members
and stuff.
He's one of them.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's one of the main members.
Yeah, Jackass is some good shit.
How did we get here?
Because Spike Jonze.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
This is 6 degrees, man.
It's still kind of related. So
it is.
Yeah, Spike Jonze produced this shit, and he also produced Jackass. He has a wide variety of taste, man.
We're just Jonesing for it.
Oh, God.
Yeah!
Oh, whoopee cat.
See, this is why we need to start recording videos for these, just so we can have the Andrew close up, the shame close up.
The amount of memes
you need
can produce.
You need a soundboard with that scream.
We call the portrait of disappointment. Just have a little a wooden frame, and just like.
I am in this show out of my will.
Andrew is Roy, and you are the 5-year-old girl. This is him testing his patience.
Oh my God, yes, actually.
Offer him a Eucharist now to save his soul.
Andrew, just punch out his front teeth.
I do frequently tune him out. I have started to tune out Zachisms, so it is a skill I've developed. So
I don't think you've developed it very well. I get in there. I just got in there.
Sometimes. Well, yeah, you know, kids are good at pushing buttons, so that makes a lot of sense.
I am a child.
The subtle jabs, I love it. I love it. It's good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Fall's a good movie.
Film analysis.
Yes.
You were asking me about it. I think you should ask yourself, what do the five characters in the second story of Roy's represent to the little girl? Do they symbolize anything? Why is Odysseus's city, or where his palace is, why is the city blue? The walls of the hospital are green.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they could have just said, okay, we're going to film here. We don't care what it looks like. Not all the time. There are always people who will say, paint it this color. Do this with it.
And if they were going to go to 28 countries, they could have gone to a 29th if one of them didn't have what they were looking for. Right. So
looking for
I imagine there is a purpose, and I have no doubt that the band of five each represents something significant, but that's a little beyond me.
All I got from that was like, oh, each one is somebody important, obviously, to her in her life there. Mm-hmm. Right, because you got to see each one
who
their real life
people.
Counterpart was, and it's like these are all people that she cared about.
Well,
right,
they're all different,
like
people.
The Iceman or whatever, the dude who just carries ice blocks, and
the old man with the teeth,
which I love that's a job.
Yeah, he
like
was the mystic
that old
in
school
the story.
Job. It's
and
like
I love
oh,
that really
jobs
late,
that don't exist
too.
Anymore. This is amazing. There's a guy who just takes ice
operating
picks and
ice
moves
toss.
Ice.
Yeah,
great ice delivery man. Love that. Anyway, no, but like that's all I took from it. I thought, oh yeah, those each character obviously represents somebody important to her. That's kind of where.
Yeah.
I didn't know if like maybe visually there are things that I'm missing, which would make sense to me because it was a pretty visually impressive and complex film. So I thought, yeah, like that makes sense. I easily could have missed a lot of things there, but I in terms of like just depth, like if you're talking. For the plot or like foreshadowing or things like that. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I felt like I didn't miss anything. Like I probably didn't miss anything, but I don't know. Maybe.
There are two shots in the first 10 to 15 minutes of the film, and I'll just leave it at that and we can move on. The 5-year-old girl, she walks into a larger room and on the wall behind her up high, there's a cross.
Yeah.
Now there are two shots where the cross is positioned above her.
Hallway.
So the camera was angled so that she was in the foreground and the cross was on the wall behind her. This was deliberate. Like the cross is right above her.
Yeah.
Twice. Why? Ask yourself, why did they do
Maybe
that?
Maybe she's dead.
She's you know what? You could go that way with it, but then,
she's
like,
the savior.
It's a
of
Jacob's
guy.
Ladder
I
thing.
I mean,
you
yeah.
Know?
I,
Jacob's who knows? Ladder. You remember
well,
Jacob's
she gives her, like, there's a lot of religious symbolism throughout this whole movie.
There is.
Yeah.
There is.
The priest there. The fact that she gives him a cracker and says, are you here to save my soul? And she's standing underneath the cross in both times. Maybe like
but that had to do with the themes of suicide, I think, right?
Oh, there's a lot of that. Just like that, you know, you repent for your sins and all that stuff. So there's a lot of layers to that.
Yeah.
One thing that I was about to actually, you just kind of triggered a thought.
Trigger.
Yeah, triggered. Was I think another, I don't think this is like the second hidden layer that I think you're trying to find. I think this is just another layer, which is this movie is a homage to filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot, and actually a lot of shots and actually story motifs are directly lifted from classic films.
Yeah.
I think one movie that we got to take into account of like characters playing versions of our lead character's imagination or something like that is Wizard of Oz. Like to a T, you know, you have the Scarecrow and you have like the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion and they're like people work on the farm and all that she just imprints that. So there's that as well. I thought the shot when the coffee falls onto and starts to sizzle a little, I don't know why, but that brought me back to a shot from Taxi Driver.
Oh, I know, with the Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, with the seltzer, and it just sizzles and it's almost the same way because it's used the same way where it symbolizes his thoughts.
Right.
And in that case, it shows that his ideas are growing in that sense with the coffee. And Taxi Driver is that his mind is just going insane.
Yes.
So little callbacks to that. And then also just the fact this is about a stuntman. And I love how they show the ending of just a montage of all the stunts that actually happened.
It's kind
of
like a shout out.
Yeah, those are the shout out to like, hey, all these stunts that you're seeing, just like what they did with this movie, are all real. Mm-hmm. None of this is fake.
Yeah, I can't you see that how they did
you
those.
See that train crash, those two trains crashing, those were actually crashing. Yep. Those are like going full. You see that building falling on somebody, that could have actually crushed them.
Yes.
All that stuff, those are all real.
That was Buster Keaton.
Yeah, Buster Keaton, that was Harold Lloyd, that was Charles Chaplin. They were showing all of those guys.
Yeah, and that was cool. That was cool. I forgot about like to mention that, but that was like a really cool part
yeah
of the film,
a good
actually.
Hulk and that's also again it's a callback to this film because mm-hmm. this was done for real. I think only like maybe like some of the CGI was to blend certain things mm-hmm. or to, you know, obviously the guy's tattoos that were morphing on the
yeah.
guy's
yeah.
body during the obviously. Holistic chant yeah, or whatever sure. that's CGI, but every shot, every location is real.
Yes,
and that is that's and
we're not Phantom doing, Menacing this shit.
No, you're not. No. Or actually, I would say more Attack the Clones.
Yes.
is more of that.
Yeah,
but
fair enough.
But yeah, no, this film is again, it's a callback to all those films that did things for real, and yeah. you see it. You see the
that horse. It,
yeah,
man, and that guy falling off that horse. That was that was intense looking.
I love
like
that
how it. We all kind of went like a little, just a little bit. Everybody was a little bit like, ooh, you yeah. know, you could kind of feel. The vibe everybody was getting for that was like, oh, that looked like it actually hurt.
He landed yeah. on his head in such
yeah,
a way that
right?
it, yeah.
it was just
yeah.
in slow mo, and you're like, that doesn't look fake. That just yeah. looks like
just
he hurt himself.
Yeah.
Quadriplegic.
I also love, oh my God. This is such a, like, only really directors or actors will really pick up on this little tiny thing was when at the end, when they were watching the film, and it was building up to the stunt
yeah.
that broke him out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they basically cut it out.
Yeah.
That's...
It's like it's real. Man.
There's so much truth to
the
that.
Look on,
or,
the look on
yeah.
Roy's face,
yeah,
like, well, nobody around him knows what's going on.
Even actually, the guy behind him is like, that was it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's true. It's so true. You put so much heart and effort into something, and it might not even be used.
Yeah, that's
it. It's amazing, and like how truth to that. Like, we can all attest that. We just, like, full actors can get cut out of movies.
Yep.
And they spend months working on it.
Well, I mean, Thin Red Line.
Thin Red Line's the best example for that.
That is interesting.
That's one of the best examples for sure. But even just like little bit parts or anything like that, it's like, wait, this person was in this movie? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Kevin
Costner from, not Stand By Me, but one of those early films.
Yeah.
From the early 80s.
Harrison Ford was in E.T., did you know?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. He was the principal. And they cut him out because he was too famous.
Yeah. Oh,
okay, that makes sense because it detracts from the film. You're like,
exactly.
When are we going to see Harrison?
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll do that. We're like, yeah, cut him out because it's distracting.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even see his face. You just hear his voice, but you know it's him. So it's almost, it's too distracting.
You're like, Han Solo's
you know?
On the intercom.
Yeah, and they'll do that sometimes where, like, they won't cast a certain actress because... Well, you just see Harrison Ford and like I remember even like he was originally casted or at least offered the role of Alan Grant from Jurassic Park, but they're thinking, well, then it'll just be another Indiana Jones movie with him running away
with dinosaurs.
So let's get an actual guy who you would believe is a scientist, and that's why they get like Sam Neill, and that's why they got like more actors. But then you get Jeff Goldblum, so you need a little craziness here and there. So that's good. But actually, if you read the novel, they casted that role perfectly. It's too good. But yeah, that's sort of what I saw, was just all the homages and all the like, if I were to watch again, I would probably pick out a hell of a lot more, but those were the big ones that I saw.
Well, and even for me, there was even a bit of like, this is kind of like what some stuntmen might go through, like potentially as well, because I thought about that as well. You've just gone through this guy's whole story, and now you're seeing a whole montage of a whole bunch of stuntmen, classic stuntmen doing these crazy stunts and things, and they get injured, you know, they go through a lot of shit.
Like, I guess, it kind of prompts the question what their stories are.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, you know,
we should honor them a little more. Kept showing over and over again of him being the guy getting punched in the face, like, I just had to see it was him and all that. I was like, it's so true. That's
so
what
funny.
I did that when I was at an extra in a movie. I'm just like, there I am.
50 Shades?
Yeah, for 50 Shades, yeah. Yeah, I'm outing myself. I'm in 50 Shades of Grey for 2 shots.
Yeah.
Find me.
Yeah. That's another layer.
I know, yeah, there's my layer. I'm wearing a gray shirt. I'm standing on a gray car. It all
what
makes...
is that foreshadow?
Yeah.
Why is McTwist in the parking lot?
Yeah, I know, right? good times.
50 layers of gray is that
what we're doing here?
Is that... We're trying to dig deep here.
Digging up those holes.
Yeah.
That's a that's one onion we don't need to peel back too much.
No.
Nah. But good movies.
Yep.
I had something in my head that I forgot for a second. It'll come back to me.
All right. I guess we will come back around to you and we go around one more time and get final thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I'd seen this before a couple times. It's still, I kind of have the same opinion on it. It still has great visuals. I still think the story, although it might be kind of simple and things like that, I think it does have, you know, a bit of emotional impact, especially towards the end with the climax. I actually thought that was really great. I think it's great every time. And I think even the performances and stuff like that in that scene were really nice. And the relationship kind of comes to, you know, hectic time and things like that. But it works out for the better. And she kind of becomes his savior. I mean, that's, I think maybe the cross thing kind of comes into play possibly as well. Is she kind of saves him in a way.
Yeah, and he does say, "You're gonna save my soul."
Yeah, and all that stuff. So
she kind of does save his soul.
Yeah. So
she kind of falls, and when she does fall and she gets hurt, she almost kind of like is acting almost like a pseudo Jesus, repenting for his sins, or like dying.
I guess because she got hurt trying to help him. So I guess that's
you could stretch that if you wanted.
You could,
but
it makes sense
as like a little subtle stuff. So and maybe there's something else there that is just like,
again, homage to filmmaking. I think you hit the nail on the head with that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds right.
You hit the nail on the Jesus.
Wow.
Oh. Ooh. I actually like that one. That was pretty good. Oh, boy.
Touchy.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, great visuals, you know, solid story, neat interplay between how the characters in real life, you know, went into the story and how they kind of melded, you know, reality blended into fantasy. And yeah, I think it's a really cool movie, and I think it's a movie that definitely a lot more people should see. I think at least for the visuals, if not the whole package, which I do think there is a whole package you should see.
Cool.
What's up, Kitty?
Yeah. I agree with Roger Ebert, I guess. I'm kind of saying like, yeah, I mean.
Oh, you mean a 4 out of 4?
Well, let's ignore the rating. But...
it exists.
It exists. And sure, go see it because there's not much quite like it. So like it would be worth seeing and just to see it, to see something different. Yeah, if you want to see something that's a little bit different, that looks great. So if it's never hard to watch a movie that looks great. Just because at least there's something for you to latch onto, but there is more to it. So I think that you will get something out of it. Your mileage could vary, as just if you look at this table as an example. Mm. But again, it is. It looks great. It does do some neat things. I did like that whole stunt aspect a lot. So the stuntman aspect, like those montage of stunts at the end, and how they tied in that he, you know, his story is a stuntman. I thought that was super compelling. I do wish that I actually knew more about finding out about his story as a stuntman. I think that's what I was more interested in anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey, maybe the sequel. I don't know. Right? But yeah, no, I'd say it's solid. What?
The Rise.
Ooh. I was gonna say The Fallen, and it's all about all the actors that didn't get to appear in this movie.
Ooh, that's better. See, that's better.
Yeah, it's about all the actors that didn't get to appear in this movie, and like what their version of the story would be, and then they get to join in the adventure, and you see like Sean Connery.
No, it's gotta
be like, I'm back.
No. It's gotta be The Fallen. The Fallen's gotta be a doc. It's gotta end up being a doc. It just sounds like you just named the perfect documentary to me.
Oh, it's like the hidden conspiracy of how some people died on set.
Oh, there's
a lot
of that.
The Fallen. No, but for this particular movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Someone's breaking the case.
Government's putting fluoride in the water.
Turn on the grog, Scotty.
So, yeah, don't feel bad if you see it. It exists. Not see it?
Andrew's rating is a 4 out of 4.
It's right. Hey, Roger Ebert baffles me sometimes, okay? Sometimes he'll say shit that doesn't match his review, or he'll rate it a weird way and then say some crazy shit. He was a weird reviewer sometimes, which is what made him so fun. So, anyway.
that's a good way of putting it.
Well, you know, I loved Roger Ebert.
He's no, I didn't. No, I was actually being genuine there. It was actually good. It's a lot of fun. I was like, actually, yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
He was never boring.
Never. This is why I loved his opinion, whether I agreed with it or not.
Yeah.
Especially when he was with Siskel. Like, oh, you learn a lot from those.
Totally
two.
Great pairing.
I watched
one of the all-time best.
No, I watched. I grew up on watching those, like, in high school. I watched all those Siskel reviews. That's kind of got me into, like, reviewing films and all that. That was my kind of, like, my door opening to that, and I would just watch those on repeat, just like do playlists of all YouTube of Siskel and Ebert reviews, and I still watch it from time to time.
Yeah.
And just like look back at old ones and go, oh yeah, and then see the ones where you're like, what the hell are you thinking?
Always fun. But yeah, I'm in his camp, and for the most part, for a portion. And yeah, definitely, it's don't feel bad, even with what I'm saying. Don't feel bad in watching it. Go watch it. It's actually pretty good.
It's worth seeing.
Yeah, that's right, it's worth seeing.
It is absolutely worth seeing, especially for the visuals, as we've all mentioned, we've done to death. Again, I think there's more to it than meets the eye. It's I think it is an underrated movie.
You went for it, Andrew. I knew it was there, and I didn't even.
We
go
talked
for that
about
one.
Michael Bay. You know, we're comparing it to like colorful characters like
around.
Transformers. And just
foreshadowing.
Had to cut exactly. Yeah. It was already
it
foreshadowed
was
in
too
this episode.
Good to pass up.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. Yeah. There's more to it than meets the eye, yes.
I think for the North American market, it's definitely underrated. Like, if more people here on this side of the world had heard about it and seen it, I think that 3.6 million or 3.8, whatever it was, would have been bumped up at least a couple million, if not double. Because out of all the people I know, no one at any point from 2006 to now had said anything about it. It's only yourself, Jack, Zach, Rylan, only the three of you had even mentioned it.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely a film worth seeing more than once, fall in love with the visuals, fall in love with the story, and see where it takes you from there. And don't be afraid to go a little crazy with overanalyzing. Now, with analyzing films, and I'll be brief on this, I don't think you should apply it to, say, like Friday the 13th part 7. I don't think you need to go there with saying, well, what are the layers, the foreshadowing symbols?
Yeah, you
don't need to go there with
we'll
it.
Talk later.
We sure will. But I think for a film like this, as Jack said, an homage to film, I agree with that, so thank you for bringing that up. I also think that it's interesting that the end sequence with the supercuts of all the stuntmen, it's narrated by the little girl, and it's just her trying to recount all that. So then it got me to thinking, well, what if most of the story or most of the screenplay was just the director or the screenwriter saying to his little girl, maybe, okay, so what happens now? Mm-hmm. What if most of this film is just told by the little girl?
I'm sure M. Night Shyamalan wrote one of his scripts based off that.
Mm.
I think The Lady in the Water was based on a story he used to tell his kids to go to sleep.
Yeah, that's
and then
right.
He's like, okay, hey, I can make a movie about this. And then years later, no.
He's never good. I've noticed he's never good with doing things based off what his kids like or what he tells to his kids. Because that was the thing in The Airbender, too. He's like, oh, my kids like it. I'll make a movie. And then it's like just the shittiest thing.
Robert Rodriguez did the same thing with Sharkboy and Lava Girl. Mm-hmm. That was actually his kid is credited as one
depends
of the story based off of.
Depends on the director.
Oh, though. Totally.
Yeah.
Scorsese made a movie for his kids, and it was
and
amazing.
Yeah, and his parents.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of films that are like, this is for my mom, this is for my dad.
Oh, yeah.
And all that stuff.
But if we're talking explicitly kids, obviously Hugo.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Which that's one of the best awesome kids movies ever made.
I thought you were talking with Taxi Driver and about his future kids.
That's right.
No, Mean Streets, man.
Yeah, Mean Streets, yeah. Precisely. Kids, this is what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're gonna meet Joe Pesci.
You're gonna be drinking in this bar, right? And then you know what's gonna happen.
Oh, good
Joe
shit.
Pesci does look like he could stab you at any moment.
Yep.
I think
Joe Pesci was George Carlin's god, so that should tell you all.
I just listened to that yesterday, actually, for the first time, and that is so funny that you bring that up. That's so good. That whole bit was so good. It's like, I can see him, he's there, and I know he can do stuff for me, so I'm gonna pray to him.
Prayers answered at roughly the same rate.
Yeah, 50-50.
Joe Pesci will straighten that little cocksure car out with one visit with a baseball.
I know. Oh, that's so good.
One of the comic greats, man.
Yeah.
I need to listen to more of his shit.
You should. I was listening to it when it was totally inappropriate for me to be listening to.
I listened to Carlin for a long time. That was a late
bloomer. My dad was a shitty parent.
I don't know.
You just keep playing Carlin comedy sets in the car with your kid. I don't know if he's absorbing all of that.
That sounds like an education to me.
Yeah.
It kind of was. Maybe that's why I fucking hate things and children.
Yeah. All makes sense now. It's all George Carlin's fault. Seven words he should have never said to you, man.
That's right. I heard them all.
Good stuff. Are you good?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I remember what I was going to say because it actually comes back to you, Mr. Andrew. I was trying to think. I was like, what? I felt like we've seen a similar movie to this just recently, and it just dawned on me. The Little Prince.
So I
was about to ask you, I was like, because you're like over the moon for Little Prince, and you were saying how this film kind of played certain subjects safe. Would you say the Little Prince took that story element of like telling like a kid a story, and they're trying to change it on the fly, and there's some obviously a lot of layers to the story of it? Would you say that was one that did it right?
Absolutely. Like for me personally, because they really went there. I felt like they went there with the characters, you know. They had, they didn't shy away from death as much. They were a lot more, they were willing to talk about it more, like directly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can always allude to things instead, like if that's how you want to do it, but it just felt like they weren't really addressing anything in this film. Mm-hmm. They were alluding to it very, very lightly, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, suicide. Yeah, he's suicidal. But what does that mean? We don't know, right? Like, at least in The Little Prince, what does this mean? You kind of get an idea of where his mental state is because they're kind of showing you and they're kind of telling you a bit more. Maybe they're holding your hand a bit more if that's, like, I guess that would be fair. But I don't mind that if it's in service of going a bit deeper.
Yeah, yeah. I agree that The Little Prince is a lot more like committed to its specific message overall than this film is.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, this one is...
Well, and it had a totally different message.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I just bring up the two films just because they kind of use the same storytelling device, which is...
I also like the way they did it. That is another thing that was a big reason why I liked it so much is the fact that they used animation styles to differentiate. So another visual element.
Mm-hmm.
But that one really stuck with me because I also love stop motion and I also love that the art style that they were using for the prince's story, because they were using it is same from the book. It was that hand-drawn style, I dug it quite a bit. So that's what I liked about it in comparison. I think it is just that the visual elements agreed with me a bit more. I think like it stuck to me personally, or it was something I enjoyed personally. And then they committed to it 150%. Like they went right for it.
It's just when you had first brought up your review of it, I was like, oh, that's just reminding me that we had seen something, and I was like, oh my god, like you put a film that out that actually I was like, the comparisons, I was like, we should be talking about this. Because I can't think of any other film at the top of my head that we've seen all that is the perfect comparison.
Also, they didn't make the Little Prince stutter or, you know, fuck up lines. You know, he was pretty fucking coherent.
Yeah. And Jeff Bridges also is.
Even Jeff Bridges was coherent. So, you know.
Well, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But I wanted to just. Quickly bring that up before I forgot it.
No, that's fair. It's just obviously that's a preference.
Just overall, this is I like I said, fourth or fifth time I've seen this film over the course of, like, I would say, like, a decade by now. Yeah, no, still holds up. I can definitely attest, yeah, you'll see new things every time you watch it. You'll pick up on little things. Like, I'm bringing up stuff that you didn't see. Yeah. Like, I'm bringing up shots. I'm like, yo, you didn't see this? Like, I'm showing you this after this episode. I'm showing that cut because it's so good. Mm. But yeah, no, I definitely think this is, in terms of, like, underrated films.
Yeah.
Out of all absolutely. The films that we've picked, this is definitely, in terms of, I wouldn't say it's one of the best films that we've done, but it's definitely one of the most underrated.
It fits the bill.
Fits the, not many people know about this, but when you see it, it's one of those films like,
why don't we know about this?
I've never heard about it anywhere. And it feels weird that it's so recent. I didn't even notice it going to theaters. I didn't even notice it. I think I worked at the theater that year.
It was only, it premiered at Toronto Film Festival in 2006 and was released in theaters in 2008.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah, I was definitely working at the theater that year. Yeah. So I don't even know if, so I didn't even notice it. I never heard anything, never saw an ad. I never, any of that crap. And, like, honestly, I noticed those things even for smaller films and things like that, especially when I was working there, just because I was so overexposed to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I never said the underrated aspect, but yeah, like, it really does. You're right. It does fit that bill quite a bit.
Yeah, no, it's like, there's other films like, it's a sequel to something, or you can,
if it's good and nobody at all saw it, then it's underrated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And like, this one just, it has some things in it, like what Ira said, that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And just as an attestment to the filmmaker, this was this is probably his magnum opus.
It is 100%.
Yeah. So if this is like his contribution to the film world, and this is what he's going to be, I hope like this film will be get like more, they'll have sort of like a reevaluation in like a couple of years from now. People are like, oh, you see this film, and then it sort of grows and all that. I feel like some of the problems that you brought up, Andrew, are sort of the reasons why I don't think it's sort of exploded, because when you do first see that kid actor, and I have seen an Iron List on worst performances or like worst part of a movie, is because the first time you do see her, it is a little jarring because you're not used to seeing a kid actor who's almost, you know, too natural in a sense, or like, but then when you see it a few more times, or even the second time, you just can't see it any other way. It just fits too perfectly.
She grows on you.
She really does.
I guess it feels like she's not acting. It feels like she's if I had to sum it up, that's what I'd say. She's just being herself. Which is authentic. So I could see how you could go both ways on that.
And I can see why you would I totally get your reasoning for for sure. So definitely, if anyone who, you know, you love movies and you love just seeing pretty images and you love just seeing a real hidden gem, this is like a real hidden, not many people know about this, but you won't regret seeing it. Even if you don't like the film, you will not forget this film. It's just one of those movies that just kind of sticks with you.
Just let it fall off your shelf into your Blu-ray player.
I couldn't say it better myself.
Let it fall.
No, honestly, I could. That's good. Put it in. Just download it. Watch it. Watch it on the best screen you got. Watch it on the highest resolution.
Zach's gonna make me fall off the wagon.
I got Alex more on that one.
Yeah. Actually. So definitely
develop a drinking problem. Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it enough, right, to want to have it on the show. I'm so happy.
Yeah, it's a good pick.
Yeah, it's good choice.
No, yep.
Definitely good pick. I can't say I've ever seen anything like that.
Cool. Well, I'm glad y'all liked it. Thank y'all for coming out and watching it with me. Except for you, Jack. You're stuck here with me all the time anyways.
And what can I do?
But what you can do is you can check out this episode, which you probably already are if you're listening to it, but you can also check out The Little Prince, and you can also check out a whole bunch of other episodes that we've done by going to one of those platforms where they play people talking, and also Facebook and the Facebooks, Twitter and
the tubes,
the twits and DeGrams,
and DeGrams,
whatever else the DeKids are using. That's these days.
iTunes.
And don't forget to send your presents to Jack's mailbox. Didn't mention that. I just wanted to throw that in, that we forgot to mention. I'm sorry, but you can send your letters and your dead animals send to all his your mailbox.
Alex, the day I get my
all,
first...
All your Alex Jones memorabilia to Jack's place.
Day...
No, yeah, yeah,
yeah. The day I get the first powdered... album. If the day I get the first powdered envelope in my mailbox, I'm forwarding it to you.
you, the audience.
If I'm getting anthrax, you're going down with me.
Yeah.
Jack really likes getting collector's editions of the A Serbian Film DVD. So oh, please send
And Necromantic. One and two. Ooh,
yeah, and like lithographic prints from right. that film as
well. Yeah, get all the different
Jack's a
copies.
Sick motherfucker. Why are you looking at me?
I'd like to announce this is my last episode.
If the FBI is listening.
I have to go away for a while. I'll send cards.
Will they have gnomes in them?
For you.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Crumbled up in the envelope. So
I'll take it.
It was once a gnome.
Yeah, okay.
If Tarsem Singh ever listens to this, and you never know, it's a small world.
Love you, Tarsem.
And if I'm wrong about the multi layers of the film, please reply with the words, I am the walrus. Thank you.
All right.
All right. I think that says it all. Let's go listen to more George Carlin.
Bye, guys.